Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/FTSW. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Come to Air Temple Island, your new home. I'm the Avatar. You gotta chill with it.
You're the Avatar, and I'm an idiot.
You're a firebender. Boil it yourself.
Go away, Mako.
Don't worry. I will protect you, my feeble turtle duck.
I will make no such promises.
Bolin's got some moves, huh?
You amuse me. I will make you mine.
You shall meet again soon, beautiful woman.
I can't wait to get started. Yes! Finally!
Hello and welcome to From the Spirit World, a legendary Avatar The Last Airbender and the Legend of Korra podcast for DongluFang.net. If you want extensive discussion from longtime fans of Avatar, then this is the podcast for you. I'm your main host, Dylan, and today I'm joined by Mel.
Hello.
Sam.
Hi.
Teresa.
Hello.
And Delaney.
Hello.
Today we'll be discussing The Sting, the latest episode of Korra, what we will probably think of as a big improvement over previous episodes, so yay. Today we'll be having the episode discussion. Before that we'll have news, and after that we'll discuss some theories we have going into next week's beginnings. Definitely looking forward to beginnings next week, and we'll get into that. You can email us at dylan@donglufang.net. Discuss this episode and this podcast on the forums at donglufang.net/forums. Donglufang, D-O-N-G-B-U-F-E-N-G, one word. Our podcast website is donglufang.net/podcast, and our Tumblr and Twitter are at donglufang, one word. Let's get right into the Korra news. In Korra news this week, we had low ratings. So let's get into that, because that was pretty bad. Korra dropped to an all-time low of 1.103 million viewers and a 0.4 adults 18 to 49 rating. The reason it dropped over a million viewers is because the lead-in went from a SpongeBob repeat to a Sanjay and Craig repeat. The lead-in refers to the show that airs before the episode. Theoretically, when Korra was at 7 o'clock, people watched SpongeBob at 6:30, and then it went into, most of them stayed and watched Korra. So since Korra didn't have SpongeBob before, it didn't have an audience going into it. So this is mostly not Korra's fault. It's Nick's fault for not putting a lead in there. But they rectified it this week by putting three SpongeBob repeats before Korra. So they realized that Nick knows that this was the problem, and they fixed it. The question is, why did they not do this last week? I am not a Nick executive, and I knew this was going to happen. It doesn't take that much knowledge of ratings to figure this out. I think maybe Nick wanted to test if Korra had that much of a built-in audience. And the answer is no, it looks like. Only a million people are willing to watch Korra, even with nothing before it.
Teenager, stop streaming, God.
I mean, a little bit.
I don't have a TV.
I'm just joking. I'm just saying that's mainly what it is.
Yeah, like college students, no TV. Like, yeah. But no, it's not really. It's the most people that watch Nickelodeon are kids. Nickelodeon has a ratings problem all across the board. Well, TMNT comes back tomorrow on Nick. Nick has a lot writing on that show. The only really core show Nick has doing well currently is SpongeBob, and that show is mostly repeats. If TMNT drops off like Korra has been doing, they're in big trouble. They're already in big trouble, but like we're talking like not good stuff. But luckily, Korra has already been ordered for all four seasons. It would not make sense for Nickelodeon to cease production at the very least on Book 3. Book 3 is certainly being animated right now. The worst case scenario is Nick says Korra's low ratings. It's not worth the money to animate Book 4. And this can only happen if they haven't signed the contract yet with Studio Mir for Book 4, which I assume they signed Book 3 and 4 at once. But if they didn't do it for Book 4, then that's the big money hole. So that's the worst case scenario. But that's very unlikely. And the realistic worst case scenario is Korra moving to Nicktoons, which is possible. But we'd still get the episode. So I don't. Really, it's not that big of a deal. It's bad, but it's not awful.
And then Nick just streams SpongeBob repeats for like ever.
I read this in an article this week. 43% of Nickelodeon's programming is SpongeBob. Actually,
oh my goodness.
Actually, 43%.
That's kind of sad.
It's the most single franchise dependent network on the air, and that's not good because the ratings are going to go down for SpongeBob even more than they already have, and Nickelodeon will be in trouble.
And SpongeBob is less ADD than than Cartoon Network at the moment. So people are like, Cartoon Network.
I mean, I don't know. Cartoon Network has some successful properties right now, like Adventure Time and stuff. This is, I guess, the only thing this could be is bad ramifications for future Avatar franchise properties after Korra. For instance, Mike and Brian seem to want to make a Korra movie. If Nick stops existing, that would be a problem. I'm not saying Nick's going to stop existing, but like Nick is doing really badly right now. If they start losing a ton of money for Viacom, Viacom could shut them down.
And we were going to have good, we were going to be good, positive, and now we're like, no, Nick's going to fall apart.
It's really bad. This isn't just me. Like, I've read several articles this week that people speculating that Nick's doing horribly.
Went from Korra got really low ratings to Nickelodeon is done for.
It's not just, no, dying. It's not. It's a full network thing. But yeah, Korra getting a million viewers is not a good sign. One of Nick's tentpole franchises. But anyway, okay. Anyway, New York Comic Con is tomorrow. Most of you will be listening to it probably after it's already happened. This podcast, I mean. Saturday, October 12th. The panel will feature Beginnings Part 1, so they'll see it early. I'm not going to even try to find it in bad quality. It's not really worth it. We're going to be seeing both parts next week. And Brian, Joaquin, not Mike, along with Janet, PJ, and Steve Ewan, who voices Avatar Juan, will be at the panel. So that's pretty cool. Not like you can get tickets for that. They were sold out before Korra was announced to have a panel at New York Comic Con. And we have descriptions for, well, this episode, but that is episode already aired, and Beginnings. Korra learns about the origins of the first Avatar, is the description for Beginnings Part 1. And then Beginnings Part 2, Korra realizes what she must do to restore balance to the physical and spiritual worlds. Spirit worlds, not spirit.
And no
worlds.
Comments on her mental state.
No, yeah, well, we didn't know that, so that would have ruined the surprise of the Beginnings description.
Fair enough.
Said that. It should be noted, Beginnings will be airing from 8 to 9 p.m. next week on Nickelodeon.
To know.
So, the way the Nickelodeon Twitter phrased this is, Korra will be on at 8:30 for now, unless there's a two-parter, in which case it'll air from 8 to 9. Which makes sense, because Nickelodeon stops programming at 9 p.m., then Nick and Night
comes on. Then Full House comes on.
Then Full House, yeah. Full House. Great, anyway. So that's the Korra news. Oh yeah, and as of now, there will be no Korra episode the following week from Beginnings. There will be a podcast. What that is on is to be determined. We might discuss that later. So, let's get into The Sting, written by Josh Hamilton and directed by Ian Graham. It's seemingly increasing... It increasingly seems like they're just rotating credits. Certainly they're rotating directors, but they're actually rotating director teams. Writing credits might just be nominally rotated. Let's go around the horn. What did you think of The Sting overall? What did you like about it? What did you not like about it? Let's start with Mel.
I thought it was it's better than a lot of the things. I know a lot of people liked last week's episode, but I like hated last week's episode. I wasn't on the podcast to say that though. But I think it was way better than last week. I didn't like Bolin's storyline for a couple of reasons, but I really enjoyed Mako and Asami, and especially seeing Asami and hearing her say more than three words or sit in the background. So I really enjoyed it.
Nice. Teresa.
I really liked it. I agree. I think it's probably the first one that I really enjoyed so far in this season. I liked parts of Bolin's storyline, and I absolutely hated other parts. I surprisingly really liked Mako in this episode, and I think, in a way, I think I liked it better because we got a break from Korra, because she's kind of been annoying me, and I was like, wow, you were on screen for all of 2 minutes, so that might be why I liked it so much.
Okay, cool. Delaney.
Well, I think I agree with Mel and Teresa pretty much on all the points. I really liked the episode. Of course, this isn't really like the first episode I've liked. I do think it's better than last week's, mainly because of the campy movie stuff. Like, I love the campy movie stuff. It's just one of the things I live for, campy stuff. I just love it so much. And to have it in Korra was just amazing. And then the cop stuff, because I'm a mystery fanatic, like, just the cop stuff is great. And I'm trying to think, there was some... Oh, about Bolin. I'm not that big a fan of Bolin. I know everyone hates me, because I don't like Bolin that much. But I really liked him in this episode. I'm starting to like Bolin. But it was really, like, but the... I didn't like all of it. Like, you know, there was some there were obvious problems with it, but for the most part, I like Bolin in this episode.
Okay, Sam.
I mean, it was an episode, I guess.
that is true.
I thought it was probably
one. How'd you feel about that CGI?
It wasn't good at all.
The mecha.
We'll get to that. I thought overall it was probably one of the better episodes. You know, there wasn't too much going on. There wasn't like an A, B, C plot. You know, of course, Morisami, that was good. Bolin, thumbs down.
Thumbs down.
Yeah, so I enjoyed it, I guess.
Okay. Yeah, I pretty much agree with all of you. This was, I think, by far the best episode of the season. Which isn't to say it's not flawed. The reason this is the best episode, I feel like, this season is, I think Sam was pretty much spot on. There was no C-plot. This episode had room to breathe, and it really showed just in the slow pace. Like, it was seemed so methodical compared to last week, but it was so much better. Plot made sense, except for, you know, Koro randomly showing up on an island at the end. But, you know, that's
so
like...
So if we take Koro, yeah, that was a good episode.
Well, no.
They get the last 30 seconds.
No, I liked Koro. It. It's like hooking us for beginnings. I'm cool with that. By the way, way reminiscent of Aang in the season 3 finale. But yeah, it's so much slower, worked more. Mako wasn't completely awful, but I still don't like him. On the big downside is that this was maybe the most sexist episode of the season so far. Bolin, it's hard to it's really hard to phrase. It's really hard to figure out whether it's the 20s being portrayed as sexist or if the show's portrayal is sexist. And it's pretty clear to me that in this episode that the show's portrayal was sexist of Bolin's plotline. Bolin's plotline is Bolin doesn't know to separate acting from reality. And just in there was, as an element of that story, was him forcing himself upon Ginger. Obviously horrible. It was played as, you know, supposed growth. Bolin needs to learn to do better. It wasn't like that was it looked as a good thing, but it wasn't portrayed as a horrible thing. It was more like, oh, this is just an element of Bolin confusing two things. He's just confused. That's all. He's just confused. And that wasn't good. There's a little bit of other stuff. Asami's being controlled. There's no strong female characters in the show except Lin. I hate that phrase, but it's true. it's really bad right now. We need to get into that. But overall, not great episode. Much better. Much, much better. And I'm very excited now going into beginnings. Totally looking forward to it. Okay, let's start talking specifics. The A plot of this episode, as I mentioned, there's no C plot. A plot is Mako and Asami doing buddy cop stuff. And solving mysteries, and yeah,
it's the best part of the whole episode for sure.
You know, like last week the A plot was really bad, and this week it was the strong point. I think that's...
I don't even remember what last week's episode was. Honestly,
it was a lot of stuff happened. There was nothing specific, really.
So obviously, none of us were like, none of us even care enough to be like, this is what happened. Like, we're just like,
I know, I remember what happened, but I don't feel the need to point it out. The B plot was Nuk-Tuk the Explorer and Bolin confused, like I said, confusing being acting. And
wait, he's Nuk-Tuk the Explorer?
I don't remember. What is he? Nuk-Tuk the...
The hero guy, whatever.
The hero guy.
Yeah, the hero guy. So the Nuk-Tuk plot was actually pretty expansive. It contained both the old-timey movie stuff, it contained Varric stuff, it contained the Bolin's confusion plot. There's a lot of stuff. And I think it overall wasn't as successful as the A plot, even the old-timey movie stuff. But yeah, let's get to specific times. The propaganda film, movers, you know, however you want to phrase it. But the episode starts off on a boat again, like every episode needs to, apparently, with Varric's boat getting attacked. Kind of shows that the episode has an intro. It's like, it's okay, we're in for a slower ride. Like, this is good. Unalaq emerges from the spirit world. That was kind of...
Where did you come from?
Sudden, yeah. He comes from lights. And he walks out of these two light things. And then, as many of you predicted, Eska or Desna, I think Desna says that the Avatar is dead. This episode is basically season 3 of Avatar, right?
yes.
The Avatar is dead. The Avatar is dead, and then at the end, Korra washes up on the shore.
And all the boats.
And boats.
All the boats.
Yeah. It's like, you know, Meg and Brian were like, you know what was totally not flawed in perfection? Season 3 of Avatar. Let's redo that.
Let's recreate this.
Yeah, you know,
it's basically the gap between Season 3 and The Awakening. That's what this episode is.
Happened in between season.
Yeah. Cop stuff.
Because lightning can strike twice, people.
I joke about Season 3 of Avatar. It was very, yeah, I get it. It was very good. I'm not saying Season 3
I heard that.
Good, but it was very flawed. Not very flawed. I was arguing about this on Tumblr this week. I think it's somewhat flawed. Nuk-Tuk, I said Tuk-Tuk in the other one. That's not right.
I couldn't figure out what you were talking about. Did I miss it? So, like...
Jurgi and Rotan. Is what they name Pabu and whoever that is.
Naga.
Is that actually Naga, though?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not painted Naga.
It's Naga.
Yeah, but like, why? Totally.
Okay.
She was there.
This is a consequence of last episode. We didn't see what Korra did with Naga. Korra just ran off. We didn't see her run off. You know, it's confusing.
She told Naga to watch Naga.
Debut as a.
Yes,
panda,
she did. You're right.
As a weird panda.
I don't even remember that.
Thing. What is?
Yeah. Okay.
Arctic panda.
He's an Arctic panda, and Pabu is a snow raccoon.
So I guess technically that makes it a different animal because there aren't actually Arctic pandas. They're pushing it. This is like changing how hybrid animals.
Once again, though, that's like hybrid. It's like they're just putting adjectives though in front of.
Yeah,
them.
Yeah, it's like, what are they even doing? Of course, it's Nuk-Tuk, so they're just making things up anyway.
Yeah. It's not actually like real. And A Star Is Born, Volant, which was that scene where
there's so much Volant. Like anachronism with the film though because they're talking and that didn't happen.
That really bothered. Me.
Yeah, I also think probably the remote detonators were maybe
and the mega tanks as forklifts.
mega tanks in general.
And the terms of like the like film industry, like film didn't start talking until like maybe like the early 30s.
Yeah.
Whereas this is supposed to be set in like the 20s, 10s.
So this isn't like a flaw. It's more of just Brian stop saying that Korra is the 20s in technology.
Yeah,
because there are
it's not.
Stop.
You're writing it not as. I mean, Brian's not writing it, but you're writing it not as the.
I just want to know, like, how are they getting the sound if they just figured out how to move picture? Like,
yeah.
How
in the interrogation
it doesn't really
room.
Work.
That
doesn't make
sense.
I flipped out for 20 minutes about the interrogation room.
I mean, the episode was only so many minutes. So.
Did they even have, like, any boom mics, like, on set they were doing?
I'm pretty sure they didn't have boom mics then. I'm not positive, but yeah.
No, like, in the show today.
Oh, I didn't see booms, no. So how are they getting sound? Maybe they're... No, they talked on the screen. Yeah.
Maybe
okay.
They just, like, recorded
this
it.
This is when some people listening are like, it's a cartoon, guys, stop analyzing it.
No.
And I love how the InterGNet is supposed to be a new thing. Like this is supposed to be their special effects, like, magic thing Unalaq has, and it's an InterGNet when they have mecha tanks. Like, this is supposed to be the thing that awes audiences.
Yeah, like, yeah, anti-InterGNet. It's like, previously this was a box of metal that you put Toph in. Now it is an anti-InterGNet.
Oh. Also, I like how it's, like, a film serial, which, you know, is very old-timey. Very vintage.
Yeah, explain that a little more.
Say. What do you mean? Basically, back in the olden days, they had like film serials where it'd just be sort of like an episode each week in the theater of, you know, what the film would be. Like, they had like Batman film serials, I think, back in like the 40s. They had a bunch of stuff. So, yeah, that's what a film serial is.
Yeah, so it's not just, Barrick's not just filming one thing. It's like a show.
Yeah, it's like a show, but they showed it in movie theaters.
Yeah.
Because yeah, really
like TVs weren't that big in that day.
They didn't have, I don't think.
And they did, like, daily things about the war, like, in the 40s. I know.
Yeah.
Maybe the TV was invented. I don't think so.
No, it was around, but, like, it wasn't, like, really, like, commercially, like, wide.
Well,
it's kind of like computers. It took a while.
Yeah.
The 50s were when TV, like, exploded.
Yes.
Bolin fake water bends in that. So we talked last week about are Mike and Brian stating a message by like having Varric whitewash the role of a Southern Water Tribe person in this film, and it's like even more so Bolin's imitating the culture, like a non-waterbender's waterbending and like dressing up in a fake water tribe, but the water tribe seems to dig it. I don't know. Do you think they're making a Shyamalan statement here? Any indication one way or the other?
I was going to jokingly say yes.
But. It doesn't seem that way. It just seems like they're just doing, like, you know, like crappy special effects a la back in the day.
I don't see them making a point. That's the thing.
Yeah.
I see the connections that I'm stating. I just don't see them making a point on it.
Well, it's like Sokka. Like, they had, like, they're like, we have to do something with Bolin, and this is what happened.
Whoa. Okay.
Can we bring up how Unalaq, film Unalaq, looks like?
Ozai?
Fire Lord Ozai.
Yeah. Yeah, this is very reminiscent of Ember Island Players, this whole thing.
That's kind of why I wanted.
Except, you know, less funny, like, significantly.
Well, I thought it was funnier in the fact that it was campy, like, because the whole play thing was, it's a play and this is stupid, and you're like, oh, this is funny, but then, like, it was campy, the movie was, which I thought was, like, I feel like they're two different kinds of funny.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed the fake movie. I don't think it was spectacular, though.
I was laughing the whole time, so
I like the theme song. The theme song is good.
Yeah, I did like the theme song. And then Ginger Talks.
It wasn't Brit.
It was not Brit. I guess we should explain that. Brit dyed her hair red, and we thought that Ginger would sound like podcast co-host Brit. But yeah, her voice is like really high-pitched. I tried to find
and
the
adorable.
Voice. I tried to see who is the voice actors for Ginger, but Nickelodeon aired the wrong credits after this episode, so they didn't.
Way to go, Nick. And you wonder why your ratings are down.
Well, I don't think people care.
You wonder why you're doomed.
I don't think people care about the credits. They're in the very bottom of it. Like,
well, obviously they're getting lazy because they
bottom
don't care.
One, yeah, it was the season one episode credits. Like, it was like Lieutenant's voice, but yeah, anyway, it was bad. I mean, it's you'll be able to find out very, very shortly after this because the episode will be up on iTunes. And yeah, so then we go to Asami and Mako, and Asami's like, my shipment's stolen. And, so the interrogation room, anachronistic. Lin is there in the background talking to people. Mako has to be the rookie cop, blah, 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 bombs. I didn't like the scene. I thought the scene wasn't very well done.
I like how that one guy has an afro.
Yes, I love it. It's great.
What did he call his mustache?
Blondie Beauty.
Yes.
It was great. I really liked the scene aside from, like, Lin, like, which is really terrible because she's my favorite character. Like, I don't like how they're doing Lin. Like, I don't know, like, you said she's, like, the most, like, she's the strongest character right now, and I'm like, you're not doing Lin justice, and I just want to cry.
I agree, but Lin is the only one who stands on her own.
Oh, yeah, like, yeah, definitely, yeah. Which was the sad part, and then, and that's, she was ruining the scene for me. Like, if Lin had, like, not been there, I would have loved it more, which just hurts me deep inside.
Yeah.
How did she bother you? Because I don't really know.
Like, that's it, I guess, because I don't know, like...
She wasn't, like, charming mean, she was just mean, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was consistent, that's how she charming. Kind of
I agree, this is Lin's character, like, but she was, I guess my problem is that she was being used for a plot device here, and
yes,
she didn't have her
it.
Own character shining. It's like, oh, Lin is just the police chief, so we show Lin in the scene.
Yeah, that's it, that's what it is, because they're like, she's really a background, even though she has lines and is doing things.
Yeah, she's definitely a background character.
That's what's bugging me.
I guess go ahead, Drew.
I think I liked having her there because... I think a reason that I liked Mako a lot more in this episode was that he didn't
berated.
Do everything right. Like, well, he didn't succeed at everything, and I liked that Lin was there to be like, no, like, go away with your brilliant plan. Like, I liked that if she hadn't been there, he might have, you know, been like, well, I have it all figured out because I'm the mighty Mako, and like...
Sure, I don't think she was awful, like, and I think she was important to the story.
I don't think she's, like, being super mean. Like, I mean, I liked it the first episode. Remember, I was like, yes, Mako got, like, mauled. Like, I love that.
She's being a police chief. I mean,
I don't, like, it's not her, like, doing her job. I don't know. It's just...
I'm not mad at Lin. I'm mad at the portrayal in the game.
There we go. That's what it is.
It's like, Lin's fine. Like, Lin's
like, awesome. I love Lin. Yeah, yeah, exactly. See, that's why, because I love her so much. It's like Sam and Bolin. This being upset.
Sam Bolin's probably more upset. Reasonably so. Bolin was used much worse. But... It's like, I don't know. This isn't a major problem. I'm just saying, like, they're using a character who they should be expanding upon more, and who's one of their big strengths of the show. On one hand, in this episode, they identified a strength in Asami and used her more, and on the other hand, I should do that, Sam. They had Lin and just put her in the background. Sam said in chat that I should add the Nuktuk theme to the quote lash in the beginning, which I shall try to do for next week. Bombs, Mako's like bombs and stuff. The reason I didn't like the scene, not only did I not like it, I kind of hated every minute of it. So I should clarify. There's the big difference for me, I've found one of the main differences between last season of Korra and this season of Korra is there's a few scenes each episode that I genuinely hate. So, like, there's just nothing really, they're not done well, they're not conceived well. This is really one of them for me. It's just not, it's plot, this was the plot moving very fast. They did it last episode, Mako being the rookie cop. They had the other two guys there last episode. Nothing really works. There's two other scenes this episode. Last, as much as I maybe didn't love last Book of Korra, it was consistent and there weren't just horrible things, I guess, except fart jokes. But yeah. I don't know. Did anyone else agree with me? Mel, any opinion?
No, not really.
Okay.
I'm trying to figure out exactly what you're talking about, to be honest.
It didn't work. I mean, I don't know. I have the outline scene by scene.
Okay, so you say bombs. Like, what are you talking? I'm sorry.
Bombs,
ooh. Like, what are you talking about?
Mako walks in with the trigger. He's like, remote bombs. I figured it out. It's a connection. And yeah.
I thought we talked about that.
No, I know. I'm on the same scene. I'm on that same scene.
He's not over it.
It was a weak scene in the episode.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. And there's really no positive. But
I'm an idiot. I'm sorry.
Out of the three that I really disliked, this was the least offensive. So let's continue. Asami needs Mako's help. And then Varric's there too.
Yeah, that happens.
It's like Asami needs Mako. Asami needs Varric. You know, this is what we saw with Korra earlier. It's like, does Korra go with the route of her being under the influence of one man or another man? Now Asami needs to choose, or not choose, but just needs the help of men. Like, no female character in this can do anything on their own except for Lin.
Well, if we're going to be fair, there aren't really other female business people. She can only go to
that
men.
That is another problem also.
Yes.
I don't know if that's a problem. That's more realistic during this
time. Well, there's more
But the business problem. But no, the point to be made is there's just not that many female characters in the show
anymore.
See,
this is my deal, though, when people... Because you say that would be realistic around this time. And the fact... Like, I never understood why in fantasy settings they felt the need to...
I agree.
This sort of sexism that we've seen, you know, in our world throughout the generations. Because it's like, just because it happens here doesn't mean it would happen in a... fantasy world, why does it need to happen there?
So I feel you, but they're being consistent with it, and also I think it's consistent with what we saw in Avatar The Last Airbender.
I'm not saying it's I understand what they're doing and why they're doing it. I've just never understood why fantasy...
You know, like, we're talking about how the technology doesn't match the progression in the Avatar world, our world, to their world. I feel like our system of sexism matches the starting point where they started out with an Avatar. You know, women weren't really in charge of things, although it wasn't as obvious in Avatar. And
there were women guards in the Fire Nation.
There were women guards in the Fire Nation, but there's some stuff, but really, like, who... I mean, the thing I think of is the fortune teller. Like, she kind of ran that village, but she wasn't actually the head of the village. Like, that's all I can really think of. Women in positions of power. Sure, Azula was put in charge, but, you know, she's royalty. So that's what I'm saying. I feel like the progression of sexism from Avatar to Korra is realistic.
But it works better in Avatar because we actually had strong female characters.
Again, I don't really like that phrase, but yeah. We had more female characters in Avatar, kind of, and they weren't dependent on men, is what I would say. I do think your point on why did they need to include the sexism of the 20s here is pretty valid, especially when there's kids watching who are going to see this and not understand the connection that this is the 20s. It is sexist, but it's not now, and they're going to, you know, not really understand. Should Mike and Brian be dependent on what the children see? No, but they should realize that that's what they're doing. And we'll get more into this, obviously, because we haven't even gotten to the worst parts of this yet. This is a really short scene. Asami and Mako have, this scene wouldn't have been in last episode. This is the scene where Mako says she's out of town right now about Korra. It starts the beginnings of, Mako, like, hiding that they broke up, and it, like, gets the train rolling on the second act of the plot, which is, like, you know, the thing after the first commercial break. But yeah, it's like let's slow down, let's have moments between characters, and it's good. Even though this scene was nothing special, it's at least we're actually focusing on characters instead of plot points. So now we get the second scene that I really disliked from this. Forget about Korra. I don't remember who said that. I put on the outline though.
Probably Mako.
No one remembers? Okay.
I just said probably Mako.
I mean, but I don't remember when he said it. Like, this is Rich Bowen.
I don't know. It doesn't, like, the CGI stuff happen beforehand. I didn't like that.
This is the scene where Mako goes and Bolin's in the hot tub, right?
Dude, before that, the CGI stuff happened.
What CGI stuff?
The bad stuff with the mecha tanks. It was atrocious.
Mecha tanks.
Oh gosh, yes, the mecha tanks.
That was the mecha tanks being forklifts.
Just like the warehouse full of them, and the forklift. That was
awful. Okay. But anyway,
I can't remember the exact distribution of scenes, but yeah, I guess that's separate from the Rich Bolin scene. But anyway, so we see Bolin has adapted to the afterlife stuff. Logically, I don't understand why Bolin's being paid so much. It's like one screening audience has seen his movie. Why would he have that much pay?
I think it makes sense once we get to the plot twist.
Yes.
That's, I guess,
like Varric's trying to, like, you know, smooth things over. I mean, because Varric can pay that much.
Yeah, I understand that Varric can pay that much, but why does he need to?
He's trying to, I don't know, because he likes Bolin, I guess.
I understand he likes Bolin and he's trying to manipulate Bolin, but any amount of,
I don't know.
You know, any amount of
I think they just wanted a hot tub.
Maybe Bolin just, like, blew his first paycheck really badly.
Yeah, but he has, like, a statue made of him. That's not a normal
thing. he could have made that himself. You don't know that.
Yeah, true, he's an earthbender, you know. Could have just made
Wait,
it.
Does this mean that there's a potential for, like, Mako versus Bolin, like, at the end? Like, Bolin on one side, Mako on the other? Because if that happens, I will not be a happy person.
So they have, I don't know where they're going with, the Varric stuff.
Yep. I can see it being likely because of the whole, because Bolin's being paid and he's in love with himself as Duck Tuck.
Didn't he say dippity dip in this part?
Yes.
Yes.
So I guess what I didn't like about this, first of all, was the animation on the characters' faces.
Yeah. It looked really weird.
Yeah. But then it's just none of the dialogue for me. It was like it portrayed Bolin unsympathetically, which is fine, but it didn't really do anything. Like, what's the reason for portraying Bolin unsympathetically here?
Well, I guess this is what we have to deal with now, that since we're so used to not having scenes like this and the pacing being weird, and now we're like, oh, great, now we have scenes like this.
When Bolin,
I guess it's a trade-off.
It's a trade-off. Because they're not that great writers, we have to see these scenes along with... Well, no. Josh Hamilton's a great writer. Like, well, I don't know if he's, like, a great writer, but he's a competent writer. Like, he's... you look back at Avatar and he wrote Cave of Two Lovers and, like, that's his masterpiece. You know, that's a well-written episode, but it's not, like, amazing. As much as I love that episode. It is amazing, not amazingly written. But anyway. What I didn't like about this was just it didn't work. I don't know. I feel like we got what they're trying to say about Bolin. I don't really think that much was funny about it.
His instrument.
The instrument. I didn't... And also the animation at the end with the steam and stuff didn't work either.
Wait, did you guys see the dual swords on the wall behind him, though? And it made me think of Zuko. I felt like that was a little, throwback to the Blue Spirit.
Is Bolin the Blue Spirit now? Is that what
No, you're no, I mean, there were swords.
Are you hypothesizing that Bolin will become the new Blue
Spirit? I've decided, my theories never work, so I'm giving it
obviously you should adopt his theory.
I mean, I'm not so sure that...
I might.
I'm not so sure that Bolin as the Blue Spirit is any worse than that informant guy being Amon, so...
I want to know why... Whistleblower. Bolin just, like, took up all the apartment to, like, have a hot tub in there.
It doesn't...
Their whole apartment is basically hot tub.
I mean, right, wouldn't you, though?
I wouldn't.
Okay.
Also, I liked the mechanics on how that hot tub worked with the little furnace and stuff.
Wait, I'm glad that they had that in. It wasn't just the hot tub. They were explaining how it worked.
They thought about that hot tub.
Okay, that's our biggest pro about this scene, though.
I still like their apartment.
But how was Bolin not, like... horribly injured after Mako, like, blew up the sweater.
I was thinking that, too.
How did, like, the apartment not, like, burst or flood?
Well, this ties into Mako, like, direct fire hit at, like, during the boat scene, and, like, the guy just gets knocked back, and he's like, oh, I'm fine. I'm like, you just got, like, there was this giant ball of fire at you.
At least be a little singed.
So.
Singed.
I guess it's like it being a cartoon, nobody dies unless you blow yourself up in a boat. So.
Well, there was that guy who got slammed into a wall in underground training facility. That guy. But anyway.
And we get a repeat of that.
Anyway, okay, let's move on to the scene. I like dealing with other stuff, like, for the future of the podcast while you guys are talking, but then you guys stopped talking and I'm supposed to talk, and I was still dealing with other stuff. Anyway, triple threats. Okay, this scene was very... they go to the triple threats, and it's like, okay, I liked the that they threw reference to last season with the can Shady Shin get his bending back.
Yo, but the, like, Korra not getting
Yeah, it also it answered the question back? That Korra didn't just give everyone her bending
I yet. Thought she did.
I guess not. I mean,
just Lin, apparently.
That's classic Korra, right?
No, I mean, she probably
she
wouldn't
one
give,
job.
She probably wouldn't give it back to the criminal.
Yeah.
But, you know?
I mean, but like, what was
he's, the one? You're innocent until proven guilty, right?
I mean, maybe. I mean, well, that's assuming.
Well, I guess we haven't seen that, really.
Yeah, show
we,
some
we don't know if Shady Shin has, like, an arrest warrant against him. If they're even persecuting the triads.
I don't know. I think that's still,
are
like...
Are they just okay with these mobs existing, like, out
well,
the open? Well,
Akko just was like, I know where you guys are. I'm a cop, and I'm going to get your help. So, like, I don't know how this works.
Oh, yeah, but Mako had past connections. So
I know. Still think it's, like, a bad thing because, you know, he was born with that bending. Like, it's kind of like his... thing.
I mean, I'm
like,
not personally saying it's okay. You know, I'm not like saying, okay, we should take away stuff. We should not take away stuff from criminals, not give it back. But and it's possible that Korra just didn't want to give it to Trash.
Show some compassion.
Yeah.
Like, he just missed that day where everyone got together and
yeah,
Korra
you know,
was sick.
He was late, yeah.
He was sick.
Like, oh no.
I thought it was at 4.
And
no.
And Korra's like, that was the only time. What can I do? My hands are tied. Anyway, the reason I didn't like the closing shot of the scene where he's like, I don't even remember what he says. He's like, I think we can work something out. The reason I didn't like that is because it's like Asami offers them one thing and he's like, I think we can work something out. I'll take your first offer. I don't know.
But do we know if they were already,
if
had they already,
already
been approached about?
Yeah, it's unclear.
Because if they were, then it would make sense that he would just, like,
yes,
negotiate a little bit and then be like, well...
Understandable.
Well, since it's
from,
Varric,
from
obviously.
A plot perspective, like...
Wait, no, they said later that, like, Ping, he said afterwards, like, after Mako and Asami left, they were approached by this dude.
Does he specifically say after?
Well,
yeah.
He could have been lying, but yeah. See, theoretically.
He said after.
But his lucky toes, he doesn't want to get his lucky toes
yeah.
chopped off.
Yeah, but anyway, they're like framing the end of the scene based on that shot. I didn't like that, but I did like the rest of the scene. I guess it was fine.
Can we talk more about how team, like, once again, like, Team Avatar is just like, let's just be really shady and do all this really questionable stuff.
Yeah,
Bob, you're a cop.
Doesn't matter.
You break some rules.
Yeah,
I just think it's some rules.
Different random thing I didn't bring up before. Mako's a cop now. Why doesn't he say the location of the Triple Threat Triads to the police if they really want to get rid of them?
Because Lin's just not here for his nonsense.
Exactly. You were a former member of the Triad gang. I don't want to hear your nonsense.
You're a beat cop. I don't listen to you. Like, I don't know. Like,
so
that's
yeah, it's unclear whether they're the Triple Threats themselves, like, if they're beat, want, they're like, if they, the cops want to get rid of them. Like, it seems like no. Like, they're cool with them being there, you know? Anyway, Ping on the boat. So Ping, I think there's two-toed Ping. I think this is pretty successful character here.
Yes, definitely.
He's pretty funny.
I hope we see more of him.
We could.
Was I the only one then who didn't really like Ping?
Why didn't you like Ping?
Yes.
I don't know. I just didn't like him that much.
As a person or as a device?
I mean, well, as a device, I don't really care. But as a person, I mean, it was just, I don't know. It seemed kind of childish, especially with the jokes about his extra toes.
I'd prefer this to fart jokes any day.
Yeah,
I mean, I would. I just didn't.
I also think,
plus his design was kind of funky.
Well, yeah, but I think the animation's off altogether.
He's two-toed Ping. Like, obviously, he's going to be a little
obviously,
funky
he's
looking.
Off.
I mean,
yeah.
Let's talk
anyway,
about this.
The reason I didn't think, like, the scene run now, I didn't think it worked that much here, but I think they pull it off later, which we'll get to. Oh, so here's an interesting scene.
Can we talk about the over-friendly gangsters?
Not the scene. Yeah, no, that's what I'm talking about. Here's an interesting part of the scene. They're all, specifically about the Mako and Korra stuff, he's like, we go broke, and he's like, he says he broke up with the Avatar. Sure he did. So, there's multiple angles I want, specifically two. First of all, are we saying the Avatar in general, or specifically this Avatar? Is it, like, unlikely that just a normal guy with Mako would break up with the Avatar, or with Korra, who's
very would you break
strong?
It with Kyoshi? Let's talk about that. No. Obviously not.
Oh my goodness.
So what do you think? What do you think they meant? Do they mean specifically Korra or just a person of power? You're a nobody. Why would you break up with this person?
Okay, right? I'd say it's... Just from the gangster perspective and them being, like, criminals, I would be, like, just the avatar. Not even necessarily person of power, mm-hmm. but just the avatar. They can control all four elements under the bridge between, you know, they're all this stuff. And, like, you're going to break up with them? Like they were surprised she just flipped a desk. When he broke, and it's like Korra could have like really messed Mako up. Though when you say person of power, which I hadn't even thought about that. Think about Lin. Like, well, now she's in a place of power, and she like destroyed Air Temple Island.
Yeah.
So not making sense anymore. But I guess you really could go either way because like Lin as a person, you wouldn't break up with Lin. She's scary, and then Korra as a person, she's terrifying. But I really think as the gangsters, it's probably just because she's the avatar. And didn't she beat them up in, like, the first episode of the entire series?
Well, yeah, sure. Yeah.
So that might be it. Like, she's the avatar, and she'll mess you up, and you're going to break up with her? No!
Okay, so second question. As I claim this episode to be the most sexist episode, was this actually, like kind of a feministic scene? Like, all these, like, strong guys, like, ha, yeah, you broke up with her. Like, that's hilarious.
Sure.
Like, okay, I guess I should explain more. Like, if this could very easily, I could have very easily have seen the reaction being, it's normal, like, the guy broke up with a girl, like, sure, that's expected, but instead they thought it was hilarious that Mako could, instead of, thinking it'd be normal.
Well, I took it, just as, like, a thing of power, not so much.
Yeah, I understand, but, like, inherent, because it's, like, a thing of power, it's, like, they're accepting that, she is a person of power and she is a female, and they're not degrading that with this. They're upholding this. Okay. I think this is interesting. There's no comments here, but I really thought this was an interesting perspective, especially when later in the episode they just have this horrible bad thing. And that horrible bad thing is now. Okay. So we see the filming scene. This is where they tried to have the crux of Bolin's is confusing actor and character. So the reason why this is bad is because Bolin forcibly kisses Ginger, then Ginger kind of gets mad, but she doesn't like. She's like, "That was don't do that." Varric's like, "You broke the script." He's not upset about that. Which is consistent with Varric's character, because he's sexist. And then no one else cares. But it's really the portrayal. Like, this isn't seen as a horrible thing. This is seen as, like, you know, whatever. Like, this isn't a big deal. Even though this is reminiscent of worse things. And, like, Bolin's forcing himself on a girl.
Who happened to be tied to a table.
Yeah.
Who was tied down. With a drill. With a drill above
with
her.
With a drill.
Oh, my God.
Represents a certain shape, you know. It's like, this is all... It's really bad.
Yeah, it really, really rubbed me the wrong way.
It makes me really disappointed.
Yes, it was very bothersome.
Bothersome is dismissive.
Thing is, like, because my other thought on it is that I don't think they realize that's what it looked like because they're focusing on Bolin and it making sense that he can't figure out reality from
fiction.
Which is the entire
problem. Which is the whole problem, They don't realize that something, they're putting a sex... It's not that they don't realize. They knew, they wrote the scene. Like, they knew that this is what they're doing. They just think it's not important. That's what they're saying. By focusing on Bolin's whole character thing here, they're saying this isn't important. That our main sympathetic character, who has shown himself to be like a feminist in the past, is forcing himself upon a girl here.
Yeah, especially in the entire scene, it's supposed to be, you know, sympathy for him because he's trying to, you know, he's trying to deal with his things, and apparently his big problem is that he's confusing actor and character for some reason. Because I don't like the whole storyline for Bolin at all this season. I mean, I don't know. It just seems really nonsensical, and it seems really, compared to the things that everyone else is doing, it seems really trivial. But it's just, seriously?
I think it'll become important later, but more importantly, this isn't cool, and this is very close to ruining the episode.
For the record, I wasn't being dismissive when I said that's not what I meant.
I don't mean you dismissive. I just mean that word choice maybe sounds dismissive.
Okay, well, I'm a raging feminist for all those who are not aware.
I'm not implying that you are not. I was just saying you should be more careful with word choice. But yeah, I don't know. We need to keep talking about this because it's a big, big issue.
It makes me really sad.
So,
it makes Sam really sad. What you guys did.
I'm unsure of what my reaction should be other than to be outraged. How outraged should I be?
I mean, my immediate response to it was like, whoa, because I'm like, even the way they animated her response when he kissed her, I was like, whoa. And then just, you know, the reaction after that, I mean, yeah, Ginger was pissed, angry, but she, you know, she wasn't as angry as I think they should have made her. And Varric obviously didn't care. And they kind of just brushed it off. And the point wasn't that he did that. The point was like, oh, he's just confusing actor and character and isn't sure who he is. Not that he is, you know, just essentially forced himself onto a restrained woman.
Yeah. No,
there's another parallel I just realized from season 3 of Avatar. It goes back to Embryonal Players when Aang kisses Katara. She had said no, and then, like, I feel like, now it's definitely different because Katara wasn't tied down and there wasn't a drill above her, but I just feel like, I mean, there's definitely, like, I think they're dealing with it in a different way because, I mean, Katara, they're obviously in love with each other. We know this, we figured this out later, but Ginger is just this actress and she's just, like, there, and Bolin's just, like, doesn't even know what he's doing anymore.
Yeah, no, let's compare those two. With Aang, that scene is really not well done. It's hard. Katara does say no, but she doesn't. It's not like she's.
Oh,
I'm not trying to justify Aang's action, but.
I mean, there's definitely a difference. There's a difference in severity of what, and like it's definitely much worse in Korra than it was in Avatar, and it's also dealing with the whole fiction and reality thing because Aang got really freaked out by the play.
Yeah. Mike and Brian seem to be big on the unexpected kiss thing. We've seen it. We see Aang
unexpected,
Katara.
Unwelcome.
It's its own trope within this universe.
Aang with Katara. We see Korra and Mako
twice.
Book one of and
Asami and Mako.
And now we see Asami and Mako in this episode. We see two unexpected kisses. So.
Teenagers
before
just
I say,
themselves at each other.
Before I say the Aang and Katara scene in 317 is sexist, I want to compare, is it bad that Asami is kissing Mako in this episode? It's bad because it's you shouldn't like force yourself on someone, but at the same time...
It's like violating personal space.
Get out of my bubble.
No consent. Like,
you're in the bubble. You're in the bubble.
Yeah.
With Asami and Mako, you could say they had a past history. Maybe that makes a difference, but no, it doesn't.
yeah.
Asami was being bad in that scene.
Yeah, I've never liked that argument that, well, oh, they're... Because, you know, you mentioned it was different with Aang and Katara because, like, oh, they were in love. I mean, that doesn't make it okay.
Well, no, it doesn't. But I'm just, like, lessening in severity is what I was trying to get at, that it was... There is a difference in the severity of it.
Yeah. Then this brings up the people... This brings up people thinking that husband and wife, it can't be rape when it can't. It obviously can't.
Yes, that's true.
Yes, like that's what that makes me think of.
Yeah, I don't.
For the record, I'm not like I wasn't like yay Aang, but like yeah.
Obviously you were.
That's the other thing too. Is in that scene we're supposed to sympathize with Aang, like oh darn,
yeah, I think
she
it's
rejected
more the, I think it's more the way it was portrayed. This is changing me, changing how
he's
I think of that
so
scene
up.
In 317. No, I think we should keep talking about this.
No, that's fine.
Is Aang being a horrible person, or is he just being, or is he just misunderstanding?
Well, can we really? Okay, this is another thing, which kind of like makes me like look bad for like hating on Mako all of her season. But like, can we really see someone's a horrible person by one act that they do?
No.
So that's so let's is Aang being like is Aang making like Aang
is Aang
obviously
being
made a mistake.
Horrible, not
yes.
Easy. Obviously,
there you go.
I'm not going to say Aang's horrible. I love Aang.
Obviously,
like, every fiber.
I just wanted to make that clarification.
It's really tough. The thing is that the unexpected kiss is so prevalent in our society. It's like not seen as a bad thing, you
so
know?
It's romantic.
It's seen as romantic. We're trying, what we're doing here is we're trying to say, okay, all of these things, this thing that we accept as romantic in society is actually really bad. And it's hard to just pronounce it like that. I'm not saying it's not what we should do. I think it's good and this is productive, but it's hard, like, that we're doing this right now.
Well, just the in general sexism that we've been, like, ingrained with that's supposed to be okay, because that's absolutely what you see all the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think that's the worst part, is not so much the rage. Like, you know, there are points where there's raging sexism where it's just supposed to be blatant, and then there's stuff like this where it's, you know, it's romanticized and it's like, no, that's not okay. It's everyday things that people don't realize just how sexist that is. And unfortunately, Avatar, well, Korra more than Avatar, although I'm sure we could go back and find a bunch of stuff in Avatar now, but, you know, Korra has so much of that happening this season.
Yeah, so, okay, let's compare these three parallels a lot more, because I think this is very productive, and I think we're going to end up in a different place than we started. Aang, Katara in The Ember Island Players, Bolin and Ginger in this episode, and then Asami and Mako in this episode. Let's specifically talk about Asami and Mako. How bad is Asami for just kissing Mako, or is it just a mistake? She was overcome with emotion, and, you know, it's not a big deal.
Well, I feel like all those things are true. Like, she was overcome with emotion. That's what the cause of it was. But I don't think that makes it, like, it's still not okay.
It doesn't make it
okay. Of course, sure, it's not okay, but is it also not a big deal?
Because
looking at Mako's reaction, sure, you could think that Mako still has feelings for Asami, but he's also like, it didn't bother me that much. Compare that to Ginger's reaction. The situations are very different. But Ginger's all like, she's upset, but she's not, like, horrified. Like, it's just a kiss.
I mean, I'm not a fan of anyone doing the surprise, let me just, you know, invade your personal space thing. But there is obviously a big difference between two people who are friends and who have history versus, and not one of them's not restrained to a table.
Well,
versus,
yeah, but like I said, though, the friends and have history is reminiscent of the whole husband and wife rape thing, you know. Like,
which I'm not saying makes it okay. I'm just saying the environments are different.
Sure.
Said, I don't agree with what Asami did, and I don't, like, you know, I don't, I, and Aang actually did that twice to Katara. I mean,
it's true.
He did it on the submarine as well.
He did. That one was different in that Katara didn't say no beforehand.
Yes.
So that was, but it's,
well, that
but,
was a truly
like I said,
surprising
I'm still not a fan of people just, you know, throwing themselves at someone like that in any.
We're talking about Day of Black Sun Part 1. It can also be seen as an exit, like as a, like a wave. Not saying it's the same thing, but like it's somewhat expected in that situation, you know, him doing something.
Like, I'm gonna go off and die now. I have to kiss you you've never kissed before, and I'm gonna go off and die now.
Not like that, I mean, but just like, he's gonna at least say goodbye, so there's some action to be taken by Aang on that turn. At the same time, the Day of Black Sun Part 1, now we're making this a four-way comparison, Day of Black Sun Part 1, Aang kissing Katara, that seems very similar to Asami kissing Mako in the scene.
Which, you know, if I were to say, is it okay, is it not okay, I would say, no, it's not okay that Asami did that, but obviously it's not that simple. I mean, there's layers to what was happening.
Okay, so, no, continue.
Okay, well, no, I was just going to end with, but I wouldn't agree with what she was doing as being as an okay thing to do.
Okay, so you say it's not good, but you're downplaying it. So, let's compare Asami and Mako to Bolin kissing Ginger here. The difference is Ginger is restrained. They
don't know each other.
They're
really
strangers, which again, though, like, does that matter? And the scene is bad. So is Bolin's action that awful? If Asami's action is not good but not that awful, is Bolin's action not that awful?
I mean, anyone who's restrained. I mean, I think it's not so much even that they know each other or don't know each other. The fact that someone is restrained in that way where they can't escape and can't fight back.
Yeah, so how much of a difference does the restraint
is what makes
make?
The difference,
I think
is
there's
what
a difference.
Makes difference for me.
How? Yeah, but why is that so much of a difference? Why?
I think, let's talk about, like, beforehand when Ginger, like, when they were in the balcony and Bolin was, like, talking to Ginger and she was like, no, we only have chemistry, like, on the screen. Mm-hmm. I think that was, like, kind of maybe a clear, like, no.
So she says no.
It's not okay.
She says no.
Not to mention, there's a methodology of it, too. I mean, you know, thinking, oh, I'm going to kiss this person who's sitting next to me versus I'm going to kiss this person who's tied down. I mean, there's two very different ways that someone would go about thinking about those things.
So is the tied down and the previous no enough of a difference to say Asami was just bad but not that bad and this is horrible from Bolin? Is it that much of a difference?
I mean, I would. There's.
It's.
I mean,
it's really tough.
It's,
I think
it's. It is difficult tough. Because I mean.
Now that you've said that twice, I'm actually beginning to think that, like, we can't really, like, because it's the same action. The only difference is the restraint. And if Ginger wasn't restrained, would she have pushed Bolin away immediately, or was she, or when she, was she, or just depends on the person. That's also another thing. Like, how would this have played out differently?
Another factor to take in is that they're acting, and
yes,
that it's
this
know,
is fiction.
He can. It's fiction. He can. It's they kiss in the script. It's different than that. It's not on the script, but
it's on the script.
You're kind of consenting to being not consenting, but you're like, yeah, kind of. You're being manipulated by, you're not yourself, you're someone else, and you're being manipulated by this paper. But that's okay, because you want to do that. And so he's doing something off the script, but it's still acting. So that's another factor. Maybe that's a pro Bolin factor here.
Then, except Bolin's getting confused. He thinks
that he is Noatak.
Nuktak. But
Bolin. What? Bolin is a mon.
Yeah, but from Ginger's perspective, he's just acting. She knows he's like confused, but from everyone else's perspective, he's just acting. He's improvising here.
Well, I still don't agree with surprise kiss improv in any situation.
Sure,
in acting.
But I'm not saying it's not bad, but is it awful? That's the real question here. Is it really awful?
I mean, I honestly think, like I said earlier, think about it in your head, okay? You know, say you're with someone and you just, you know, you two are sitting there and think, oh, I'm going to kiss this person versus this person is restrained and tied down. I think I'm going to kiss this person when they can't move and can't push away and can't fight back.
I mean, the
way that someone would have to go about thinking about that is very, very, two very different things. And I would say there's more severity in the thought process of someone kissing someone who's in a compromising position like that.
So you're saying Bolin's intent is more, awful. Like, because she's tied down. Like, he's like, oh,
I wouldn't say
this
that
is
was
my
Bolin's
chance.
Thought process.
Sure, but his subconscious thought process.
In a way, yeah, I mean, I'd make that argument.
Okay, I agree with that. I also think acting is a relevant factor, and maybe excuse
yes.
Bolin. But I think the conclusion I want to draw from this is that, you know, well, okay, first of all, I should say, again, it's really hard to say, to pronounce everything as awful when this is such a socially acceptable thing to do. Like, it's actually, like, really socially acceptable to surprisingly kiss someone. Like, you have a right to not like it, but the common thought process is, oh, this is an option I have. When
it's romanticized as this is how everyone's first kiss is supposed to be like.
Yeah. When in reality, tied down with a drill above you. When in reality, it's just an invasion of privacy, and you shouldn't do that.
That's how all are.
That's what we're saying. But normal people don't think like that. I mean, it's not excusing Bolin, but you start to understand why he thinks that's okay. I guess overall, what I'm saying is, I don't think Bolin's awful for doing this. I think he's bad. But what I really want to say though is not. It's not Bolin being awful, because I don't think he is being awful. It's the portrayal of it within the scene, which is what we talked about before. It's downplayed for the sake of Bolin's little character moment here, confusing actor and character. And it's something that's seen as, the show portrays it as not a big deal. And Ginger maybe even comes off as a B word for her reaction like that. I think some people will think that.
Yeah,
I think
I actually thought she like underreacted.
I
she's
agree.
An actress and she
Absolutely.
Doesn't care.
But we are not normal people who are sexist and stuff. So I'm not saying all normal people.
I'd say we're more
stuff,
aware of like the influence society has had on our.
I think
thinking.
A lot of males would see Ginger's reaction. A lot of males would say anytime a woman acts like that, like they want to call her a B word, and
because of the pride factor.
That scene I think maybe reinforces that to those people.
And it kind of goes back to everyone's like, Cora, you are.
Yeah, which was awful. Oh my God. It was awful. But
really, really disappointed in Bolin.
Yeah, I agree. But I think I'm saying, though, I guess my overall point is that we should be more annoyed in the portrayal. Let's keep going even further because I just thought of this. Is the portrayal excused if this isn't as awful of an action as we think it is initially? Is this portrayal less severe if it's portraying a less severe action?
What do you mean? Like, what? I'm
Give
really
me an
confused.
Example.
Bolin isn't as awful as we initially said he was for doing this. Therefore, Mike and Brian aren't as awful for portraying it in this way.
Are you saying that, like, forcibly, well, not forcibly, like, surprise kissing someone isn't that bad?
I'm not that bad, but it's, I'm not saying, I'm saying, well, yeah, that's the point
we arrived at. In comparison
to
the, to what it could be if this were, like, HBO.
See, that's like the Stockholm Syndrome, though. Well, it wasn't as bad as it could have been, but that doesn't make it okay.
I'm not saying it's okay, it doesn't make saying, it okay. I was saying this is really, before we started this in-depth discussion, I was saying this is really awful that this was portrayed this way. I'm saying, is it maybe not really awful, but just bad? Like, on the sliding scale
of you kept bringing up the whole husband and wife thing. Well, we can't help but think about this in context of what would have happened next if they weren't being watched, if, you know? And so I feel like, I'm going to have to say, as like, if we're going to think of it in terms of the context and what could have happened if this wasn't a TV show, if this wasn't a kid's show and all this stuff, then it is bad because of what it could have led to. But in comparison, it's not. That's confusing. Now I'm confused.
I'm really talking about the portrayal. Specifically, what happens on screen, though?
It's still sexual harassment.
Yeah, it's that.
It's still not good.
I agree.
And no, to just give a basic answer to the question, I don't think just because it wasn't as severe as it could have been, lets Mike and Brian off the hook for letting it happen. Yeah.
Again, though, I'm not saying let off the hook. I'm just saying.
Well, I don't think it downgrades.
You don't think it downgrades it at all? Okay.
No.
The portrayal. I mean, like, this is what kids are looking at. This is like, it's not good. This is not something we need to. Something added in society. We need.
Mike and Brian have the same socially acceptable, the same social thought as everyone else that the surprise kiss is just a thing. It's not bad. It's just.
We probably need to stop thinking that way as a society.
I definitely agree, but can you understand where Mike and Brian are coming from? Or, again, is her being tied down with the drill above her? Especially because Mike and Brian wrote it and drew it that way. Is that
the whole spirit stuff we've been saying with Cora that we like freaked out about for 20 minutes.
Yeah. Well, this is longer than 20 minutes, but yeah.
Well, I meant like in past podcasts.
No, I know. I'm saying this is even worse, but yeah.
Yes.
I think overall we need to think about this more. I'm not sure of my thought process on this. I think it's still really bad, and I think Meghan Brand is bad for saying a bad message, but I don't know if it's the end-all be-all of bad. I think Meghan Brand need to stop thinking that forcible kisses are okay. I keep saying Brian in this. Brian didn't really have anything to do with this.
I think there's just like this internal, you just have this issue.
It's more Mike. And also Mike wasn't even credited for the script, but you know, he oversees, right?
Everybody ever just needs to stop with this.
This is bad. I think the portrayal, I think maybe the sum of its parts is worse than the individual parts. When we break it down, it's maybe easier for me to think that, oh, like this factor and this factor, but when you take it as you're watching it, it just comes off really badly, at least to me.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because we downgraded what Asami did, and there weren't restraints.
I do think that a lot of people are going to be like, you guys are just letting Asami off the hook, and that she's a girl, so it's okay for her.
I'm not letting Asami off the hook, but you're specifically talking about Bolin. Like, I don't think what she did was okay either. Yeah. But
it's just
in
comparison.
That whether she was a girl and he was a boy or not, there is a difference, once again, between one side of the party being restrained and tied down,
the big comparison we're drawing is that the Ginger's tied down with a drill above her, restrained. She's
like, it's not okay either way, but
it's maybe a little worse here.
Yes, because she's tied down.
Okay, good discussion, guys, on that. I actually thought that was one of our best segments, like, ever. Like, I thought that was really, really good.
Top 10 moments.
Pat yourself on the back.
I know, like, let's immediately pat ourselves on the back for good, productive discussion.
That's going on the greatest hits album.
Well, I've thought about a podcast greatest hits before, but I'm not combing through all that audio.
Go ahead.
Anyway, definitely tell us your thoughts on this. Because this is really interesting and really complicated. Please think about it before you post on the forums about it. Like, really think about it, because we're thinking about this a lot. Anyway.
And we stalk the forums, we will respond immediately.
Well, yeah, I mean, I view every post. Forums, anyway.
I was, like, even reading on Tumblr, like, on the Bolin tag just now, that, like, people were saying...
Just now?
Yeah, Ginger wasn't even tied down, because she got up, like, right after the kiss. Well, it doesn't stop, like, the connotations. Like,
and in the connotations, and also in the context of
in the context
happening,
of
she
like the,
get up.
The
she's acting.
She can't
get up. Yeah,
yeah,
it's not,
so
yeah. Anyway.
It's still not good, dude.
Metaphorically
and actually, and socially... In the social situation, she's
tied. So in every single way, she was tied.
Yeah. Anyway, the point of just now is stop being on Tumblr, Sam. Okay, anyway, back to Two-Toed Ping. Following up on a point I was going to make half an hour ago, I think this Two-Toed Ping is successful because of the way they portray his two extra toes, and it's just that shot. Like, we cut to scene, and it's from, like, behind or in front of him, and he's got his feet immediately in the camera, and it's surprising.
Mako and Asami looking at the toes.
And it's just, and their reaction.
And their facial expression.
Their facial expression, and it's just, it cuts to it right after. We had a pause to, like, let that digest his name and stuff, and then we immediately get the resolution. I thought that was very well done.
Well, like, he's a gangster. Oh, sorry.
There's already a 12-toed ping.
And then he says there's already, like, that. I thought that moment was good, too. I'm saying that this is a successful comedic plot here.
Yes. I just don't like Ping.
Wasn't there another guy named Ping in Avatar? Like, he was, yeah. Like,
Mulan was
their
named
neighbor.
Ping.
Was Ping the neighbor in Ba Sing Se?
No, his name was Pong.
Pong. Okay.
I just watched that episode
Ping
last
Pong.
Night.
Ping Pong. Yeah.
Mulan's name was Ping when she was in the army.
Yeah.
Apparently it's a common name, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, if
not
it's
as common as Lee.
Name is Ping.
Yeah, Lee. Yeah, Lee, exactly.
Ping.
So then, I will, okay, so the double crossing. So Mako goes and overhears them.
Okay, I'm glad you brought this up.
Yeah, so why are they talking about it right in the open?
He paid us to keep these guys distracted.
It's
while
like the villain monologue.
It's
but,
like when Tenzin was like,
and they could totally see him.
Word. It's like
this is just another ploy to get more power. Like, what?
Yeah, it's exactly like that. This. Yeah. Oh my god, that was I forgot about that. That was the worst moment of book one.
It was.
Like
the stairs. Like they could see him. Like,
yeah,
what's
like,
going on?
Why are you talking about it in the open? But it was somewhat okay because I thought the monologue involving him having a date and him like, this is my whole routine. Like, it was a clever dialogue that they had. Like, so like, I excused it because
I'm missing my date.
He's like,
so
this is why I never get dates, you know? Like, I thought that was funny.
This is why I never get dates, because we get paid to
because we're bad guys.
I'm
that's
not
exactly
saying he's a good guy. I'm just saying I thought that was funny and clever.
That's
dialogue.
Exactly why I never get dates, because I'm always out. Like, getting paid
so
to stop
you sympathize
she's
with
an assassin
Shin.
And she doesn't have time for love.
Yeah, exactly.
That's exactly my
okay.
life right there.
So bad concept, good execution, I would say.
Yes,
okay,
well,
now...
That they could see him was like,
oh my god, it was just so bad. Anyway, Shady Sam, exactly. Boat chase. Okay, so this is like the type of thing that we don't have a lot to talk about, but I'm gotta say, I've been really down on the fight and action scenes so far this season, but the boat chase I thought was actually really good.
They're obsessed with boats.
Like, I thought they executed.
But no one died. Someone was on a boat and no one died, so.
You don't know that's true. I thought they executed this very
someone
well.
Someone had like a heart attack.
Okay, let me actually talk about the boat chase.
yes.
Normally I would go to Jeff on here, but Jeff has a prior engagement. So the shots I liked in the scene, I thought the Ian Graham and whoever storyboarded scene, whoever the head triad was, water bending up the icebergs, like that shot of him moving hands up the icebergs coming up like right on camera. I thought that was really cool.
It was nice.
I thought the twisting of the boat and how that functions, the whole boat's turning around and stuff was good. I thought the hand-to-hand combat between that guy and Mako fighting on the boat was cool. I thought Asami throwing him off was cool, even though why wasn't he reacting while Asami was telling Mako to hold on? Like, he was just standing there apparently off camera. Logically, it doesn't make sense. But I thought it was a nice slow pace. Like, this felt like it went on forever, but in a good way. Like, we actually see an action scene develop and come and go, and it really worked for me overall. And this is, I think, when I think of this episode, like, overall, this is a major thing I'll think of, because something that previously wasn't working worked now in the season. Agree or disagree? You like the scene?
I liked
yes.
it. I mean, we yeah. finally had a good boat fight scene, because they're really going for those
with
water boat scenes.
Yeah, with all the boats in this season,
yeah.
We finally got a...
We should at least get one good one. Like, we need at least one.
There were just a couple parts when the CGI did not blend very
yeah,
well, but I guess
I
that
agree.
Was just a consistent thing in the episode.
I mean, also just the animation of the scene again wasn't good. By the way, I hope a lot of you were watching the episode like with what we said in mind last week, which was the characters who aren't talking just don't
I actually
move.
Didn't do that.
Well, I noticed.
It was blatant.
I've never liked about 2D animation, because a lot of times, you know, in lower budget 2D animation,
like this,
especially in TV shows and like this, the background, the characters who are in a scene, but just for whatever reason in that shot don't have a line, will not move. Like, yeah.
Avatar doesn't usually do this. JM's better than this, but the Studio Pro did not execute this well. People just stand there. And a lot of times they have a shot and they have sound over a shot, but it's actually just a painting. Like, it's like, it's actually Studio Ghibli does this. Like, my friend, when we're watching, like, Miyazaki is the Studio Ghibli, when we're watching those, he's like, oh, nice painting. When they have just an establishing background scene and it's not actually animation, but they sometimes do it just show off this great painting they did. Art is nice, but in this case, they're doing this with animation of characters, which need to be moving or else it's not realistic.
Yeah, see, this is why I like the transition into stereoscopic 3D animation, because with that, you can't have still people in the background or else it looks really weird. With 2D, you can kind of get away with it because of the nature of the animation. Obviously, to us, it looks horrible and awful, but it's something that, you know, seeing someone stand still in the background isn't all that weird.
Yeah, like, you don't necessarily notice it.
Yeah, with stereoscopic, people need to be moving or else you're going to notice.
I don't have really an opinion on that, but I will say that we will get rid of this animation soon. So we only have one more episode of Pro Animation. Next week will be JM animation. I'm so looking forward. The animation looks gorgeous for beginnings. Oh my goodness. But then after that, we have another Pro episode. And then we're done. So that's good.
Yay.
Asami's stuff was stolen.
She's a queen.
Can we talk about her being awesome as a driver?
Yeah.
She's the driver.
She's
like,
the queen
of
the drivers.
That's what she does. Yeah, yes.
Okay. That's what she does. Very good at this.
Mako, I'm not giving up on you.
How'd they get all that stuff out of there?
And no one noticed.
Obviously, we're not supposed to think about that. I mean, how do people steal large amounts of stuff in real life? I don't know. Like,
they're mega tanks. You can only store them in so many things.
How do people steal the Statue of Liberty sometimes?
Burning with questions now about.
Yeah, exactly. Is this Mako's most sympathetic moment in the history of Mako? I'm not giving up on you.
Yes. I'm actually starting to like Mako, and I hate myself for it, but I'm starting to like
him. Usually when he says something, it's like, oh my god, you're so self-centered. Why are you thinking about you and no one else? This was completely...
Yeah, but he is kind of thinking about him. He's thinking about his investigation.
I thought he was pretty good in this episode on the whole
thing. Not in that story.
I liked how she was... Oh, sorry.
I kind of like that it's still a self-centered statement, but it's making him more sympathetic. Like, it's consistent with his character. His character of selfishness.
Well, I like this, he was so driven still. Like, even though she was giving up, and he was so driven.
He's driven about his own thing, but it's still nice that she's there.
Yes.
I think this was his most sympathetic moment. I won't say I liked Mako this episode, but this is the most I've ever not hated him.
The best he's ever appeared in.
This is progress.
This is progress, yeah.
If Mako was like -500 on my scale, he's like now at like 5. So that's good. Like,
oh my god, who'd have thunk?
Out of 1,000?
Yes.
Who would have thunk that the one episode where it's like Mako the whole time, it would be one of the best episodes?
Right?
Yeah,
because Mako does not have a love interest, like not officially.
I don't think that's it, but
well, I don't know.
Mako's not destroying someone else's life.
Okay,
just not being a brat.
Okay, fine. We'll talk about overall whether Mako being the focus and Cory not being the focus affect the episode. But then we have the kiss, which we talked about. We don't need to talk about it that much more. Mako's reaction is it's okay. So that's kind of meant to portray Mako might have, still have feelings for Asami, you know. And
Asami is crying.
Did anyone else, like, I felt physical pain when Asami was crying.
Yeah, Asami is not good, you know. Thank you.
She's everyone's baby, and she just can't.
Yeah, like, I was really. Yeah,
no, Asami, Whoa. She just can't catch a break.
Like, Cora was crying, and I'm like, I don't care.
Jeez.
Asami, man.
Yeah,
her mom's dead, her dad's in jail.
I love how she felt like needs to state all
Yeah, she needs, it's like, we know this, Asami. Come on. You're just trying you're trying to tear at our hearts even more. Like,
are you guilt tripping, Mako? Yeah. Like, what are you doing?
She wasn't, like, intentionally doing it, but.
Pulling the dead parent card.
I think psychologically, if you need help, you should, like, try to, I think it's a realistic way to try to engender sympathy in the other person. Like, I think this is a natural psychological reaction to have.
I have a good example that's humorous, if you want to hear it.
Okay.
this is real life, my teacher, she does this to be funny, which is what's the best part about it. She has diabetes, and now she has cancer. It's very curable, like, they're curing it right now. And so she's like, I can play the diabetes and the cancer card. Like, she does this on purpose.
So that,
like, don't turn in your homework. I have diabetes and cancer.
That's what she does. Like, she's like, guilting my brother into doing academic team. Like, it's great. Like, it works.
I was talking about a subconscious, like,
I feel like that happened in Harry Potter a lot without realizing he played the My Parents Are Dead card often.
I think that happens a lot.
Isn't that like the entire plot of Batman?
Yes, it is. My parents
are dead. Okay, let's keep going. Mako threatens Ping. I thought what was interesting about the scene is a fire dagger.
Yeah, I noticed that too. Yeah. Fire dagger's return.
Which was a little bit...
That's Mako's threatening move. Like,
yeah. So it's interesting, this Mako is not portrayed unsympathetically in the scene, even though he's threatening someone's life. Like, that's not good.
Someone who's adorable, by the way.
So let's compare.
He threatens someone's life like every other episode. He and Cora are just there.
They're just, that's their bonding.
They need to calm down.
Go around.
Yeah, they just go around and beat people up.
This is a good point, though. Let's compare Cora threatening someone's life. It's unsympathetically with Naga. Like, it's like, oh, whoa. Whereas Mako does this and it comes off as, eh.
I feel like there's more imminent danger, even though Naga is very well trained, of having someone's head in Naga's mouth with, like, a fire dagger.
Also, her statement, take your life and I'll take yours, in that episode, also comes off more unsympathetically in this. I think there's a little bit of an element of sex in there, as in gender.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, anyway. I think it's, like, more acceptable for males to take aggressive action. Anyway, Bolin must be addressed as Nuck Duck, he says, which I thought was kind of funny.
Bolin.
But yeah, oh,
that
Bolin.
That bothered me, though.
I mean...
It's more the reality confusion.
I hope from this bad there comes a good somewhere.
At the end,
Phoenix rising from the ashes.
There's a rainbow.
Let's take our most, or one of our two most sympathetic characters and make them awful. Yeah,
turn them into a complete poop face.
Yeah, let's do that. That's a good idea.
Great plan.
Anyway, Varric.
I just have, like, nightmares of what's happening with Varric. Like, is Bolin gonna side with Varric?
Yeah, I could see that, honestly.
Like, I don't want that to happen.
Probably won't be in the next two episodes. That's good. We're taking a break next.
And they have to, like, beat up Bolin to, like, make him come to reason. This is good.
Yeah. I miss season one Bolin.
I know. Well, you miss Bolin.
When he was in the background.
Bringing Cora flowers.
Like, come on.
That's where it all went wrong. I mean, really.
Cupcakes.
If Bora had just become canon, none of this would have happened.
Yeah.
Amon wouldn't be taking people's bending.
Yeah, exactly.
There wouldn't be a civil war.
It's all Mako's.
It would have all been fine.
Only if Bora would have happened.
The bombs were a Varric Industries exclusive, and even though this is, like, a very obviously a plot device, I kind of like how I like it. Like, I like.
I don't know why I was surprised.
Were you actually surprised?
I was just angry.
The reason I wasn't surprised, like, it was very obvious Varric was behind all this, is because we had a theory of Bolin for soup on the forums predicting exactly what happened. So it was like, okay, this is
you win.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a little bit, but yeah, is. Exactly. It was like, a few other people also pointed this out, but they were very...
I never got the chance to.
Yeah, well, because I didn't do theories last episode. I also probably won't do it today, but because we're running out of time. But yeah,
thanks,
Varric, I apologize. But yeah, Varric Industries exclusive. Varric being evil,
His face was...
His face
doing something.
In the reveal. No, we're not there yet. Yeah, we are there. But yeah, Mako walks in on Varric buying out Asami. I want as a Shark Tank fan, I want to know what percent of the company Varric got. if you watch Shark Tank, that's fine.
All of
it. If you don't, then...
Well, to buy her out, I mean...
The joy on her face.
It just needs to be
heart.
Over 50% for controlling interest, man. Okay. But anyway,
Mako,
Varric's face is very sinister. It was kind of funny. Oh, I forgot to mention.
It's not even sinister.
It's not.
Random note for the boat chasing, and I thought the music was excellent.
I didn't even notice.
I liked it. That'll become relevant again in a second. But yeah, this was. How do you think the scene was done? This is very reminiscent of Hiroshi and Korra finding out in the aftermath last season.
I always find out the, like, when they, you know, I don't know if it's a trope, but when someone finds out something about another character and they walk to warn the person and the character is in there and
that
they
probably speak, is a trope, but
and,
I don't know what it's called.
And the character who's evil knows now that the other character knows, and they both know they know, but they have to, like, keep up appearances, and they kind of just have this stare down with each other in the room with the third unsuspecting party. I mean, I found that really creepy. in a good, I mean, it's good. I mean, it's good for drama, but that happens often, I think.
No, yeah. I just want to like Varric a lot, but
I can still like him as a villain. I think he's a really compelling character.
But like, I don't want him to be bad.
I don't think he'll be the villain in the normal sense. Like, I really think we're gonna even see more ambiguous villain. Like, not, I would even use the term villain like loosely.
I wouldn't even say
antagonist, because like, he's just, I think it's gonna be way, it's gonna be like, we're gonna build on more of what Amon kind of started, and it's gonna be like really, like, I really feel like we're gonna get into some really gray areas.
Sure, I don't think it'll be as simple as that.
I think with him, it's just like with business, like he's trying to make money.
Yeah.
And it's being portrayed very sinisterly here with his grin.
Yeah.
Well, it's the whole big business thing that was going on in the 20s.
Sure, yeah, he's like a captain of industry, yeah.
Citizen.
I should say that
the mustache is what did it, I think.
Yeah.
That face.
Anyway, I guess I was going to say that, yeah, I really like where they're going with Varric. I've liked Varric all season. John Michael Higgins, who voices Varric, just continues to be really good.
He's like, so consistent, it's glorious.
Like, I think he's the best voice actor on the show. As much as I love Janet and PJ, like, John Michael Higgins is kind of stealing it right now.
He is really good.
He's super good as Varric. Mako, okay, we just did that. And then Korra, at the end, we get this whole, I should say, the music also in the scene is very interesting.
I thought the, like, animation was nice, at least, with Korra.
Yes, there was a lack of segue, though.
Sure. It was very sudden, but,
looked like an anime.
Like, I didn't know where we were when all of a sudden it was a beach. I was like, who? Yeah. Why are we at a beach? Like, where is this?
Well, that was the point. But yeah.
Well, like, yeah. I guess they... Korra, well, then they did a good job.
Yeah. Akbar wakes up unconscious on Fire Nation shores.
Yeah, well, do we know where they're... we're on the Fire Sages Island, right? Like, that's a thing.
I assume.
Yeah. Unless they moved. Yeah, I mean, we don't know.
They moved their headquarters, you know.
Oh, didn't that island, like, burn down or
whatever? That's what I thought, too. They, like, blew it up,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
70 years to be rebuilt.
Wait, they blew it up twice. Roku blew it up, and then Aang blew it up.
No, Roku blew up his own island. No, wait, you're right.
That's where the temple is, so she's somewhere in the Fire Nation.
No, I don't know. She's on. They said the word.
It's very luscious.
So they're on an island, and it's the Fire Sage Island.
Also, the Fire Nation is a collection of islands, so they can be in the Fire Nation on an island.
Okay, Mrs. Smarty.
But I can't even talk about this scene without laughing because it cracks me up so much.
Who's Avatar Korra? What do you? This is a very hard line.
It's so funny.
Wait, I have a question.
Yeah.
That was probably.
Why is Korra in her season one outfit? What happened to her arm thingies?
Oh,
yeah,
she was back with the armband and the short.
I saw someone point that out somewhere. I don't know.
She's reverting back. I don't even know.
Maybe they got like digested by that spirit.
By the end of this season, she will be an infant once again.
Exactly. It's like there we go.
Mysterious case of Korra. Like, I don't understand.
That was the whole thing was very weird. When
serious discussion. What do you think of Janet's line read here? This is a very difficult line to read. Who's Avatar Korra? Like, it sounds so silly unless you pull it off. Do you think she pulled it off?
I think she did.
I don't know.
Even though I was laughing the whole time, just the whole situation, I thought she did it well.
I don't know.
I think this whole thing is really absurd. Like, she has amnesia.
I mean, let's give them an episode to explain it. But I think that... I think Janet continues to, I don't know about shine, but continues to be very competent. Like, I think this line read was not awesome.
I don't think she failed the line, but I don't think it was, like, spot. I don't think it was, like, unbelievably perfect, but it wasn't, like, that was terrible.
I mean, I don't know. I feel like this line, that's a super hard to pull off line. I didn't expect
that. Yeah, definitely.
Maybe we should ask Allie to do it.
Yes, Mel?
I think the lines following that initial line were better than Who's Avatar.
I kind of wanted them to end it at Who's Avatar Korra. Like, we understand.
Now, that would have been awful.
Actually would have died. Like, I would have died.
But the lines following it are just like, I don't remember anything. Okay.
Yeah, but I think that makes the situation a little less absurd.
And more serious.
Instead of just being like, Who's Avatar Korra? And it's like, okay, cut to credits. It's like, really?
Yeah, I would have been like, really? Yeah, exactly.
Okay, I can understand that. I did like that they ended the episode on, like, shots of the waves. Like, they gave it more time to breathe at the end. It's like, let this sink in, this plot development. And they didn't have the credits show over the end of the episode, meaning they also had time at the end of the episode.
But that confused me. The waves actually confused me, because I was like, I feel like they last too long, and I was like, is there something in the waves? Are the waves all spelling something?
Seriously? Avatar just lost all our memories.
is there something that everyone's seeing and I'm not?
You're saying that Avatar Korra's been so fast paced that this slow moment confused you. Like, yeah. What's happening? Yeah. What's happening?
I was like, is there something else? Is there a plot twist?
The spirit is going to rise.
Is that a sinister wave? Is the whole wave
next
a spirit?
Next episode's gonna continue the waves, and then it's gonna eventually gonna involve Korra in the fire stages. And then,
So, like, you forgot who you were.
What?
I don't know.
What?
Because isn't the next episode the one with Juan?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. That's an interesting way to bring Juan in, then.
I agree. I don't know. I don't know
who's Avatar Korra.
I just don't like that. I don't like that they gave her amnesia. Like, it just seems really silly.
I agree it's silly, but let's see where they go with it.
Well, maybe it'll work in Avatar. Like, it never works anywhere else. So maybe they'll pull it off in Avatar, which is,
like, a form of amnesia in Avatar.
It almost feels...
No, Aang in the finale, the series finale.
That wasn't amnesia, that was...
Is how did I get here? Yeah, sure.
No, it almost feels
how
like...
blacked out.
Remember the season 2 finale, you know, Aang died, but then, like, he had to go to the spirit world and that little game thingy Nick.com had.
Yeah.
It feels like that. Like, he has to, like, reconnect with everybody, has to find everybody, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, there were those shots in the trailer where there was Avatar Roku and then Avatar Kyoshi.
Yeah, it feels like it's going to be like that, except it's going to be an episode and not a game.
What was the name of that game?
I thought it was From the Spirit World.
From the Spirit World in it. Whenever I Google our name, that always comes up. It's annoying.
So to get 17 years of memory back, she has to trudge through 1,000 years of Avatar history. Yes. In the spirit world.
And I'd like to point out, this is the part really, like, killed me, which I thought was so funny. You know, like, the whole clip we talked about with who's probably going to end up being a lady fire sage, which you haven't seen before, or...
Who's Rava?
Or fire lady, yeah. And so we're going to be like... What did she say? Like, do you know who you are? So now it's like, out of all the predictions we could have made, we didn't go with the most obvious, overly used one, and it's actually that. Like, it's actually
that she's actually asking, do you know who you are?
Oh, I
said. That's been killing me. Like, I can't even, like, focus.
She was dead serious when she asked that.
I don't know if that's true, but that's really funny.
That's the greatest thing.
You mean in the trailer, yeah, that when she says
I hope that's no. I hope that's Honora.
No,
asking.
We'll see if that's Honora, Azula.
If that's Honora, what the heck does Zuko look like?
Zuko looks like that granny from SpongeBob. They first invented chocolate.
He still has a bright red scar over one eye.
When they first invented fire flakes.
I've got a feeling that'll be a
100 over 100 years ago.
I'm thinking. Anyone else agree? I'm thinking Azula for that.
Well, it has to be Azula.
I think it's just an old lady.
Zuki,
what is she doing?
It's just some random old lady. Okay.
It's literally some random old lady.
It could be someone that we know, but I don't think it's Azula.
I have evidence that it could be Azula.
I'm thinking Azula too.
Chocolate.
I think her voice is there.
She's too short to be Mei and Zuko's child. I want it to be Honora, but it can't be because Zuki isn't real. It's not. I refuse to recognize it.
It's horrible.
I mean, you know, Zuki's canon. What are you going to do about it? It's obvious.
Maybe it's Anji.
Can it please be Anji? Oh my goodness!
Pull out every single Fire Nation person.
I really want
Serena Williams.
Thank you. Now I really want it to be Anji again. Oh yeah, it's Serena Williams.
A tennis ball goes flying through the shot.
Her character doesn't play tennis.
How do you know? We don't see her
leisure time. Yeah, that's true. We only saw
her off times. We never saw her.
We're really going fast time. Why are we discussing Serena Williams? If you're unaware, Serena Williams played a character in Diablo 10 Part 1.
Can I say one thing that's like actually way far back in the episode, but I just remembered that I liked this scene?
Yeah.
Sure.
maybe not.
When
Mako sees when he goes and sees Bolin filming, and he sees the guy setting off the explosives, and, like, there's that whole, like, dramatic zoom in, and it's reflecting in his eyes. I really enjoyed that part.
That's reminiscent of that scene where we saw the informant, and we, like, zoomed in on him.
We had some misinterpretations
of that scene.
It's an actual, like, gasp.
That was the three. You know how many people agree with me on that theory? Everyone but you.
I didn't agree. I was like, this is obviously not.
I like that. I saw a GIF of Bolin running from the explosions. So it was like me on my way to steal your girl.
we need to grade this episode. We're not even at the mid podcast plug. We're going to be the end podcast plug this week. But yeah. Okay. Overall, what would you grade this episode out of 10? A 5 is an average episode of television. A 10 is the best episode of television you've ever seen in your life. And yeah, let's start with Mel.
I would have to give this one like a 7. I mean, minus the parts with Bolin that I have many qualms with.
You can't just grade minus the parts with Bolin.
I mean, well,
anyway.
No, I mean, okay. Let me put it this way: in spite, like the plot with Mako and Asami was enough to carry the episode, and make the parts with Bolin less irritating than maybe they would have been in a episode that didn't have as much supporting it. So I would give it a 7 for that.
Okay, Teresa.
I'm kind of tempted to give it an 8 just because I was so. The comparison of this one to last week's was so great that I was like, wow, I greatly enjoy this episode. So I think I'm just going to go ahead and give it an 8 because I think it's the best one so far this season. And I hope that eventually I'll be giving episodes like, you know, 9s or 10s. But for now, I'm pleased to give this an 8.
Okay. Sam.
I'm going to give it an 8.25.
Wow, that's very high.
Jeez.
For reference, you were at like a 3 a few weeks
ago. I was at a 3 two weeks ago. Last week I was at like a 7. I'm giving it an 8 because I thought it was a really good episode. I thought it was definitely... You know, last week I liked that episode, but this week it was... Like last week it was eh. This week it's like better quality. I liked that there wasn't that much going on, like that we had like pauses. There was no C-plot. Of course, Bolin's disappointment right now. I like that we kind of got like shots of Mako being not a poop face, and that we get to know him a little better. And you know, Asami, she's there, she exists.
She has lines.
She has lines. And actual.
Actual things happening.
Yeah. Actual things happening for her.
Delaney, what would you give it?
Well. Teresa and Sam gave me the push from 7.7 to an 8. I was going to put an 8, and then I was like, no, I can't do it. But I really, because for me, like, I agree with everything everyone said. Like, I mean, it's a great episode. You know, like, the pacing's, you're like, yay, no C-plot. You know, we can actually breathe.
Yeah.
And, like, the Mako stuff. But for me, I laughed so much watching this episode. Now, some parts, like, the end of it, I really shouldn't have laughed. Like, they didn't want me to laugh at the end of it, but I laughed so hard. But, like, I mean, I really enjoyed this episode. It was just so, like, I don't think I've ever laughed so much watching any episode of Avatar Korra. Like, it was... No, I mean, I would say Avatar's definitely funnier, but, like, I laughed like, the entire time through this episode, which probably isn't necessarily a good thing. But
no, it gave you joy in your little sad life.
Wow.
Sam is projecting.
For the record, I read a lot, and it freaks Sam out. And
anyway,
So I really liked it.
Cool. I'm not with you on the comedic beats. Like I was not laughing this entire episode. I don't know.
It wasn't the jokes. It was like the film was funny, the campiness, and then the end of the episode.
Yeah. I don't think I thought the film was as funny as you guys. Not to say that it wasn't.
It's just the campiness. Yeah.
I understand. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying I didn't feel that. I think my grading scale might be slightly different than your guys. I feel like an 8's a little unrealistic. Which isn't to say you can't give it an 8. That's not really a consideration for me. Last week I was at a 4/4.5. This week I'm gonna be significantly higher at a 6.75.
It's not the highest so far.
This is definitely my highest. Well, see, originally I gave episode 2 a 7. I believe I retracted that on the following podcast. If I didn't, I retract it now and give it a 6.
When you say an average episode of television,
thank you. That's a good comeback, Teresa. But yeah,
I get kind of.
That's why I laugh. I apologize.
Yeah. What, Sam?
When you say an average episode of television, I get kind of confused.
5 is turn on the TV.
I don't know what you mean.
Turn on the TV.
What is the average?
It's just whatever random show, not this show. I mean, honestly, I want to say an episode of The Big Bang Theory, even though I think that's an above average comedy on TV. Like I actually and watch The Big Bang Theory, but I feel like that's not that's at a 5 or 6 each week. Like that's not very high. Okay. So that's what we're talking here.
Whatever.
But yeah, anyway, and a 10, that's I wouldn't give any episode of Avatar except 1 a 10.
What's that?
Just season one finale.
Siege of the North Part 2, yeah.
But Siege of the Part.
Siege of the Part.
Siege of the Part.
Yeah, anyway.
Siege of the North.
North 1.
Anyway, yeah, this
Siege
is,
of the Part North 1.
This is my favorite episode of this season by far. Not by, I mean, it's by 0.75, but whatever. It's significant. It's seven-ish. Like, this is very good in terms. It slowed it down. Very successful. I hated the Force Kiss, but I hate it slightly less after our discussion, but I still hate it. I hate the portrayal. I hate this continued sexism in the show. But overall, this episode worked, and it, like, I can't say that. Like, this is the first episode of this season I can say it just worked overall. Like, I thought it was very good. Not very good. I thought it was just, you know, like, worked. I just said the same thing three times.
Did it work? That's what we really need to understand.
I'm not sure about that. Anyway, last any last thoughts before we move on and probably end the podcast?
Are we going to do the book recommendation?
Well, yeah, but I'm saying before we move on to that.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Okay, no last thoughts on the episode. For you, only for you, only you guys, the listeners of the From the Spirit World podcast, Audible is offering that's not true, it's for a lot of people, offering a free 14-day trial and a free audiobook download just for checking out their service. I think that's actually what I'm supposed to say. I never remember. But yeah, you can go to audibletrial.com/FTSW and get a free audiobook download. Seriously, it's free, except you have to cancel the subscription if you want to stop after 14 days. Delaney this week has The Graveyard Book by Neil Gaiman to recommend for you.
It's awesome. Also, Gaiman. There's an Audible app.
It's Gaiman.
It's Gaiman.
Dude, I'm trying to sound British here, okay?
No, he came to my school. It's Gaiman.
Okay.
That's pretty cool. He did the commencement speech. The famous one at my school. It's Gaiman.
Okay. Yeah, Delaney, can you recommend the book, please?
Okay, well, first of all, there's an Audible app. Get it. It's awesome. Mm-hmm.
Yes, cool. Plugging Audible, cool.
Okay, so The Graveyard Book, just tiniest bit of background. I had to read a Newbery Award-winning book for academic team in, like, eighth grade. This book, it sounds stupid, changed my life. Like, I never read, like, it's so good, like, because it's just so different. Has pictures in it. Don't let that turn you off. Like, because it just adds so much to the book. It's so mysterious, and it's Neil Gaiman being awesome. Did I say his name right?
Yes, Gaiman. Continue.
Good. It's The Graveyard Book. It's a kid, his family's murdered. It doesn't really give anything away. You read that, like, the first page. And he goes to live in a graveyard, and he's raised by ghosts. Like, he has a ghost teacher. That sounds really stupid, but, like, he's growing up and learning all these lessons in the graveyard, and, like, he has these special powers, and it's just really awesome. It's a really short read, which is really sad, but it's such a good book. And it will tear your heart out, but it's a good tearing your heart out. I just love this book so much. Like, yeah. I think. Really
cool.
Hard.
Neil, now I'm confused as which one to say. Gaiman.
Gaiman.
Whatever you want to say.
Neil Gaiman, he's very good. I've read American Gods by him, which is an adult novel. But it's,
they're making that into an HBO show.
Yeah, they're making
an
HBO show. It's extremely good. Like, he's maybe the most talented alive writer right now. I mean, there's a lot of competition, but he writes TV,
like, he's awesome.
Yeah, he also writes for Doctor Who.
Yes, which is, like, a plus.
I thought the name
is married
familiar.
To Amanda Palmer, and I like Amanda.
Yes.
Palmer.
Anyway, yeah, you should check that out. That's a young adult novel by him.
Slightly juvenile. I was really surprised they ranked it as young adult, but it's definitely worth it. Like, you're just such a good plot.
Cool. So check that out. audibletrial.com/FTSW. So briefly, so no time for voicemails this week. Felicity sent one in as we're podcasting, so I don't have time to pre-screen it, but also we don't really have time. Thank you, Felicity, though.
This is what happens when you take a half hour to talk about sexism.
I mean, honestly, I think that was maybe our best discussion, so I'm not going to apologize for that. But yeah,
you don't apologize.
Anyway,
I would apologize for art.
If we play, yeah, exactly. We'll play the voicemail next week if we have time. Thank you, Felicity. You guys can send voicemails by going to dongwufeng.net/podcast and clicking on the thing that pops up on the right side.
Give yourself time to breathe.
I know. I'm talking a lot. Like, I don't really
maybe
talk.
I'll send a voicemail.
I don't like talk a lot, really.
Do it, Mel. It's fun.
Right now. Anyway, Gareth sent us an email. Do you guys think the quality of the show will continue to fall in the later seasons? Avatar is one of the few good shows on TV, and I'd hate to see it become unwatchable. For reference, that was sent after last week's abysmal episode. Gareth, it did abysmal. Improve, Gareth. Like, abysmal. It wasn't actually abysmal.
So, yay!
So,
I really didn't like it.
It's interesting,
In the later seasons, though, I think that's just a thing that happens with TV shows.
You think it'll go down? It's interesting. Yeah. I don't see it becoming worse than we saw for the first six episodes here.
Seasonal rot, that's what it's called.
Yeah.
I feel like it'll be more in the middle if that happens, like in other seasons. Like, the beginning and the end will be great, it just might be a little bit in the middle, we're like, ugh.
Yeah, I could see that. I don't know if we'll see a discernible quality difference, because they did it bang, bang, bang for these three. I think they might be very similar.
Maybe.
Yeah, anyway, we'll see. Gareth also was the first one to donate to the podcast.
Yay!
Gareth,
yay!
Thank you awesome. So much for donating, thanks, Gareth. You are now listed as a contributor on the credits, and I will be reading your name every podcast, hopefully, if I remember. I'm going to assume you want me to say only your first name. If you can, you can write me and say whatever you want me to call you.
Give me
entire name.
Yeah, tell me whatever. I'm just going to be safe and say
first, middle, and last.
But yeah.
We can give you a nickname too.
I'll say this right now, though.
Gary.
If you enjoyed, G-Man. Now that we're about to end it, G-Man. If you enjoyed today's podcast, consider donating to From the Spur World. All donations
like
go. Don't interrupt the plug. All donations go directly to supporting our podcast. You can donate by going to donglufang.net/podcast and clicking on donate at the top. You can pay pretty much in any form of online currency, like not Bitcoin. We don't support Bitcoin.
NeoPoint.
We don't support NeoPoints either.
Money. Euros are acceptable.
No. Yeah, they are.
Give us NeoPoints.
Gareth is from the UK.
So yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, anyway.
NeoPoints, money from that you stole in the...
Don't they use, like, galleons and sickles over there? I mean...
Harry Potter made it all, it always does.
Anyway, okay. You can pay in galleons.
Anyway, thank you so much, Gareth. And you can, if you want to support the podcast, you can do so by listening, but also by donating or by getting an Audible
iTunes
free trial.
Reviews.
Or by getting us iTunes reviews. Those are good, too.
Sometimes they're good,
sometimes they're bad.
Sometimes they're awful.
Anyway, quick check. We're way over we're over our 90
minutes. Well, then just calm down.
I put a poll on the forum saying, do you like our strict 90-minute structure?
And most that was people, like 3 hours. Let's
most
go.
People said, don't limit yourself. But those are like the dedicated podcast fans. I think the
I said, don't limit yourself.
Also, Sam, I think the casual listener wants...
Wait, what is it? Express yourself, don't repress yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Check in on theories. We gave credit to Ballin for Soup on the forums for pretty much saying exactly what happened with Garrick.
Ballin for Soup. I like your name.
Yeah, Ballin for Soup. The new forum members are bringing the puns.
Like, they're, Chosen One,
Chosen
I'm still,
One and Ballin for Soup, those are pretty good. Like, you guys should join the forums and keep up the pun parade.
And you can't join unless you make your name a pun.
Yo, no, that's not true. I should change my name to Simon in the Shadows.
Can you change your name? Sam,
you can pretty much use your name in every title of like of the track from season one.
I probably would.
Like the Sammy and Simon, like
yeah.
I don't know. Lost my heart in Sam, Republic Sam.
Sam would appear.
Anyway, very quickly.
Hard boiled dot 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 Sam.
So what were you saying?
Very quickly.
Simon in the Shadows happened because he used to appear like a ninja on Skype.
Yeah, I still do that.
It was like Simon in the Shadows.
Since we didn't have time last week, Delaney, do you have anything to add to what happened this episode with Varric, like in theory wise, for your theory?
Well, for the record. Like, my theory is pretty much the same as Ballin for Soup. Like, he wrote it, and I was like, I wanted to say things, but I refrained because I thought I was going to get to talk about it. But that's fine. I'm talking about it. I was like, Varric's behind it all. He wants to be the big money tycoon, and, like, I kind of already said it. Like, I don't think he's going to, like, I don't want to call him a villain. He's just going to, and I can't even say antagonist. Like, he's just going to be the puppet master. There we go. Like, he's going to be pulling all these strings. He wants the war to happen. He's going to make money off of it. And the whole, like, he's like, I was like, he's behind the bombings, obviously, and then the explosives, and so I just feel like he's just pulling strings, and I feel like, and I also think this is going to lead to Mako becoming, like, I think he's going to get promoted, he's going to become detective, and I feel like this might actually pull him away from the team.
Less Mako, sign me up.
not really related to, like, the Varric theory, but, like, I think, since Mako, like, the team doesn't know that Korra's dead, air quotes. So, I think that might be, like, either that's going to push Mako toward Asami, or when they find out Korra's alive, it's going to be Mako's going to be like, Korra, oh my god, I love you, I'm never leaving you ever again.
I don't care about love.
Two more things I wanted to, or I guess a few more things I want to talk about here before we end. We never talked about Mako being the center of this episode and Korra not being in it. Do you think that Korra not being in it was the reason this episode worked so well?
Yes, that's the sad part.
See, I'm going to argue no. I'm going to say it was more about the pacing and no C plot. I haven't hated Korra this season. I know. The problem is that she's been acting unsympathetically. She's just so stressed out. It's not really fun to watch. Like, that's like a big thing here. And I think it's like they're just dramatizing it too much and stuff. And not that we got into this on Tumblr. By the way, if you want to send us an ask on Tumblr for the podcast, please specify that you're sending us a question for the podcast.
So you can't ask Dylan what his spirit animal is.
So I'm going to answer it. Okay. Oh, you're still bitter. So I'm going to answer. I'm going to answer it just on our Tumblr, unless you like specify.
You know how many of my asks Dylan has ignored?
It's fine. All of them.
Every single one.
Anyway, Korra is allowed to be a drama. Like, yes. We're used to Avatar being like a comedy mostly, but they're allowed to be dramatic with Korra. It's just that the problem is that not that it's a drama, it's that they're not pulling it off. But they change this episode. This was dramatic in a good way. Like, it's pretty and poetic. What is that Ty Lee's line? It's pretty poetic and funny in a good way, or dramatic? I don't remember what she says.
I don't know.
Remember, this is in one of the quote lodges, so that's why I know this line so well. Ty Lee, it's pretty and poetic. And also scary in a good way. There we go. She's talking about Azula. This happens to me in real life. I just get reminded of Avatar lines when people say stuff, and I'm like, "What is this? What is the Avatar line here?" It's allowed to be a drama. It's just that it's how they execute it. I think Korra's allowed to act pissed, but if it's a constant, it's maybe a problem. I think a break from Korra is good, maybe.
Like I definitely agree it's the C plot thing. Like, I mean, I was glad Korra was in it because she's been getting on my nerves. Though she has every right. It's just, as you're talking about, like, the constantly. It's like, come on, it can be like, get some development or something, some change. I think the C plot is the major thing though. Because, like, even if Korra hadn't been in, like, let's say Korra hadn't been in it, but the air babies had been. Like, I feel like we would have been like, oh my god.
Yeah, and we also didn't have Tenzin and family, which I think was a good thing. I don't think they've been executing that very well.
Yeah, I don't I don't think that it was like fantastic just because Korra wasn't there, but I think we're going to appreciate Korra so much more in the future episodes now that we had a break from like all the overwhelming angst.
Well, now she has no idea who she is.
So now she got eaten.
Yeah.
The spirit thing ate her identity.
Character development, we have a clean slate, let's start over. Is that what's happening?
No, I don't
Wait,
think
does that mean that
happening.
There's some poor spirit that's like absorbed Korra's character?
Yeah.
That giant thing is now Korra. That giant
spirit. Oh god, everyone watch out.
Yeah, giant spirit.
Marco's in trouble.
Anyway, I want to discuss two things people brought up on the forums that we haven't talked about yet. This is the plus for posting on the forums right after the episode. Toon Gal, who's a frequent forum poster, she's pretty annoyed about the amnesia thing, along with which one of you was annoyed about the amnesia.
I thought we were all annoyed.
I'm not really annoyed. She says it's cliches and stuff like that. Is it turning into a soap opera, she says. I would say let's give it a week to see what happens. I mean, this was me with the animation too. Like, let's see.
All we need is just like a really like cheesy organ. It's like dun dun dun.
Yeah, exactly.
I wouldn't say soap opera. I'd say it's just, is it the same thing? Is a soap opera and a sitcom the same thing?
No.
I think it's becoming a sitcom, for the record.
Sitcoms, like, laugh. I'm not, like, laugh track.
That's what's going on. Like, that's what I think, anyway.
Legends 303 says he didn't like all the forcing the love triangle down our throats with Asami kissing Mako.
I didn't feel that way.
See, I didn't feel this way either. I never am annoyed with them bringing in romance and love triangles into the show. I think it's how they execute it. Like, I think it's a valid plot point.
I didn't feel like it was a part of some sort of love triangle.
I did think it was part of love triangle. Like, I feel like it's, we're getting Asami and Mako again.
See, love triangles bother me, but I'm like Sam, like, I didn't see that. Like, I really don't think, like, Asami and Mako are going to get back together. Like, I really don't think that. I think it's a non-issue.
See, I think it is an issue. I think this scene indicated both have feelings for each other.
Not a love triangle when one of the parties has been eaten by a giant spirit. So, it's just...
Okay, that's
but anyway.
It's a love...
Three of the zingers tonight.
Yeah, man. Yeah, a lot of them. Pretty strong performance. Okay. I don't know. That wasn't too much of an issue for me. I thought that scene was executed pretty decently beyond the whole... It was a forced kiss.
Well, Sami was crying, but couldn't help it.
Yeah, I thought that it was interesting how they executed. Anyway... That's all.
Boil it yourself.
That's all for this week's podcast.
Boil
guys.
Your best line.
Yeah, I want
ever.
Sassy Asami. I don't want crying Asami.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
Boil it yourself.
There is no sass. It's upsetting.
This is all for this week's podcast. I've been your host, Dylan. Co-hosts have been Mel, Sam, Delaney, and Teresa. I produce, edit, and host. I already said host the podcast. I created with AJ. Technical directors AJ, Kevin, Jeff. Musical credits go to the Ishida Brothers, Jeremy Zuckerman, and Luke Tripp. Logo and banner by Kevin Coppa. Dong Feng is owned by Jeff, and Gareth is a contributor to the podcast. Thank you, Gareth.
G-Man.
If you want them to stop calling you G-Man, you can say so.
No.
It's already a thing.
He can't stop it.
He can stop it if he wants. He's a contributor.
I'm like part of G-Man supporting us.
If we end
put G-Man, Chibli G-Man.
I will do it.
Last week, you guys, every week I put up a poll on the Dongbufeng main page, dongbufeng.net, that's it. You can vote on your grade of the episode. Last week you guys were much more down on the episode than usual. 10 of you gave it, 10 out of 35 gave it a 6 out of 10, which for you guys is very low. Like, normally you're giving it 9s and 10s, which some of you did, but in general, much lower. People just see a core episode and they want to grade it highly, which I disagree with. So far this week, two people have graded The Sting, and one gave it a 5 and one gave it a 10. So, you know, a definite agreeing of opinion there. But anyway, that's all. Thanks for listening, guys. All the good stuff we mentioned. Also, you can check out see who we are. Our podcast bios are on our...
Oh, I still need to fix that.
Yeah,
you say that every week.
Dongwifeng.net/podcast. You can check that out.
And, I say it 5 seconds later because I don't care.
Yeah. Anyway, you can see, check us out there. Please join the forums and join in the discussion. We've had some really good discussion recently. Like, Bowling for Soup said exactly what was going to happen. You too can give us your theories and stuff on the forums.
You too can say exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you guys will probably say what's going to happen again. Anyway.
Why don't they make $3 bills?
They used to.
Why?
I have to.
That's an important question.
What?
What?
Wait,
the number to have as currency.
What? Why did this? No, I'm confused.
Wait, you guys know Aang's face is on the yuans, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Sure.
Okay, oh, we're dumb. Okay, we're dumb. What should we end on?
I was just thinking
G-Man.
G-Man. That's not part of the episode, though.
G-Man.
Dippity dip.
Toad ping. Or whatever whatever they say.
Saman in the shadows.
Okay, Saman in the shadows.
Okay, this is going to be a week where you can end on anything you want. I don't even know what I want.
G-Man.
I don't even know what I want. And except, well, you can end on G-Man if you want.
You can't
Thank
stop.
You, Garrett.
I'm ending on G-Man.
I don't even know what I don't even know what's a good thing to end on.
What's the thing they say about Nup Tuck? Like, what is that their catchphrase? Whatever the animals keep saying.
Oh yeah, I don't know.
Nup terrible.
Yeah, Nup terrible.
So they didn't pull that off. That didn't work.
What was the other one? Nupcastic. I can't remember. They said weird things.
Nope, terrible.
I'm gonna go with not terrible.
Whatever. Thanks for listening, guys. 1, 2, 3. Bye.
Dippity dip.
That was sad.
Yeah.
So late.